Awesome. All right. So this is our Navigate Your Neighbors, Love Your Neighbor workshop. It's sharing your faith. It's also how do we live our lives in such a way that people want to know a little bit more about the hope that's in you. That we talked a little bit about that on this weekend. So hopefully that was a good, if you were there this weekend, it was laying the foundation for now a little bit more interaction on loving your neighbors, sharing life with them, just being the kind of people that is good news and speaking good news when God gives us the words and the opportunities. So that's what we're hoping to accomplish tonight. Just a quick, I don't know, like language house kind of, when I or Steph, when we talk about neighborhood, we do mean kind of your immediate neighborhood, your street you live on. Maybe your neighborhood might have a name to it. It's a development, but we also mean quite possibly your city or your workplace. It's kind of the place that God has put you, and our lives are busy, and so some of us are in one place most of the day for a long period of time. Some of us have to jump around to different places. So I don't want it to be a restrictive term, but I do kind of want us to think about your immediate neighborhood. Because I think when God said, love your neighbor, he did mean anyone that you come in contact with, but he certainly meant the person next door to you, the person across the street, right? So we don't neglect them for others. We still make that our neighbor, actual neighbors, our priority. So when we talk about loving your neighbor, we do mean the person, the houses, the households next door to you and around you. We also mean the people in the office that sit next to you. Steph and I like to think about in our prayer life, we like to think about the 30-foot rope. If you were to have a 30-foot rope that extended from you, and circled all the way around you, what people would that rope intersect with? And that's a focus area, right? And then we also think, so that is a focus. That is anybody that hits that rope is your neighbor in that moment. And so, and then we also like to think of neighborhood as a place that you can live a lot of, that you do live a lot of your life in. Okay, so you have the 30-foot rope, but then you have this neighborhood, this place. And we define it as a place large enough to live a lot of your life in, but small enough to be a known character in that place. This kind of, let me say that again. Neighborhood, a good definition of neighborhood is a place large enough to live a lot of your life in, but small enough to be known, to be influential in that place.
So you've got your known character. Grocery store, you've got your places that you frequent, your coffee shop, so things like that. So your, if that makes sense.
Maybe your business or your work is in that area. Some of us,
whatever those places are, so that it defines it a little bit more, gives it a little bit broader.
Is that any questions about that? That's kind of what we're talking about. We don't want to be confusing with the language. Is that right? Okay. All right. So don't restrict yourself too much, but also we want to get your minds thinking about your own neighborhood. And so let me just show you. I have three pictures here of our neighborhood, just by way of knowing who we are. Okay, so we live in Corvallis, Oregon. Our town is 55,000 people, and about 20,000 or 25,000 of those are college students. So we live in a small college town surrounded by a bunch of agriculture, lots of big trees, very green, rains a lot. It's awesome. It's a great place to live. We love our city, and we love our neighbors. And this is so if you happen to come through our neighborhood, you might see this. And this is right in the front left is Usha and her husband, Sean Carr.
And that's their house.
And that is their house. That is their driveway. Their driveway has become our dining room when we have gatherings. The reason is toward the late afternoon and evening, it's the only place shaded. So it works really well. You know, I have all the food out there, and then a couple neighbors, we bring our grills down, and we just have a ton of fun on our street. And we love our neighbors. And I think in that picture there, there's our boys.
That's my grandma.
Graham.
She just passed away, she lived with us in October.
And she lived with us for... Yep. Anything else you want to say about this one?
Nope, but we do this at least once a summer, if not twice.
Yep.
Okay, next.
Next picture, the solar eclipse that went through.
Oh.
So our neighbors wanted to celebrate the solar eclipse together, which was really cool because people in our city were traveling all over. Where can you get the most time in totality? If you ever get to see totality.
We actually rented our house out and stayed in my grandma's apartment. And so we were on, it was really cool. We Airbnb'd our house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But so we're all paying lots of money to come right to our city.
Yeah, so that was cool.
You can see the solar eclipse shadows on the ground. Yeah. Okay. It's
super pretty cool.
But yeah, this is our neighbors and some of their kids and some of their grandkids, and it was a ton of fun celebrating that. And man, what an awe-inspiring event! And I heard so much worship language on the street that day that we don't normally hear from our neighbors. So it was a great conversation starter for a lot of our neighbors. They were just in awe of something that was completely out of their control. And then here's another gathering that we had in the same driveway. Picture of the grill. I'm often grilling. I don't know why. I'm kind of the designated griller. Brett, the guy in the hat here, he's the designated music guy. He pumps music from his driveway to the cul-de-sac. It's pretty fun.
We all have roles. Yeah.
So that's our neighborhood. Before we get there, I just want to have you guys with one other person, just start thinking about your neighborhood right now. And just to kind of get your mind wrapped around your neighborhood, I'd love you to answer a couple questions. One, what's one thing that you love about your neighborhood? And two, what's one thing you would like to see changed, if you could, in your neighborhood? So just turn to the person next to you. And
say the question again.
Yeah. One thing you like, one thing you wish was different, one thing you could change if you could. If you're by yourself, you're just going to have to get up and you're going to have to go talk to somebody.
This is helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You guys get it.
So if you want to butt in, it's fine.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's not like
expensive. It's like using just a breaking off.
All right, 30 seconds.
30 seconds. We're rushing you.
Yeah, lots of communication. Yeah. I have had two neighbors that live in the same house, different neighbors.
Just a couple things.
We won't have
to.
Yeah, because this is just to get the minds wrapped up.
Okay, so go ahead. Out of time.
All right. Okay, wrap it up now. It might have been too quick, but I'm sorry. We'll keep moving forward. So maybe at the very least, maybe it got you thinking about your place. Maybe for the first time, you've never really walked around your neighborhood and thought, oh, what would I do differently if I could? Or how could this be a better place, to a better environment for everyone to live in? So that will hopefully get the juices flowing. But let's talk about why place even matters. That's the next slide I want to go to. This is good friends of ours, Al and Iris. That is Iris in the picture. And one thing they wanted to change in their neighborhood was this little traffic circle. It was always full of trash, needles. They live in Seattle. It was full of, just lots of gross stuff. And so one day they decided, we want this to change. Iris loves the garden. And now look at that traffic circle. And it's so cool, their stories about how just beautifying that little place led to neighbors coming out, neighbors wanting to help them, conversations. It's amazing. So they have some really cool stories. So, but Why is that significant? Why does that matter? And I just want to quickly talk about four reasons.
Let me just say something really fast. We've been driving all around the whole country, and there's a couple places that we've driven that I wonder, why would you want to live here? First of all, it's freezing. So I think place is important because it's not just about the things of the place. Like you guys live in a beautiful place, and we do too. So it's easy to say, oh, I'm about this place because it's nice. But just this is about people in essence. Like we're really thinking deeper than just a really nice place to live, or you like to work out and you got mountains here. So I had to remind myself a few times on this trip. Something praiseworthy in every place that you've gone to, because there is something. There's something, even if you don't appreciate the place. But it was different when we weren't with people. I would say that too. It made a big difference.
Yeah. Place matters because of the people.
Because of the people. Okay. So.
And scripturally, the incarnation of Jesus is in John 1:14. It says, Jesus, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. So, Jesus thought it was important enough. God thought it was important enough to have him make his dwelling in a place. And I'm sure, I don't know where he grew up, but I'm sure there were things about his place that he didn't like, and there were things that he really appreciated. But that gives very, very concrete significance to us making our God making us dwell in a place. So Matthew 6:10, the kingdom of God, where Jesus teaches us to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done. Where? On earth. A place on earth where God has placed you. Another reason, we talk about the fragmentation of society, and that just there's a lot of polarization, there's a lot of division, a lot of splintering. You see it in the church, you see it everywhere in society. And Jeremiah 29:7 talks about the people of Israel leaving Jerusalem, being exiled, right, to a place. And what does God say there? He says, seek the welfare of that place that I have exiled you, because in its welfare you will find your welfare. So place matters because it's the ground where we get to seek the welfare of it. We get to make it hopefully a place that is conducive for relationships. And the last reason is place is significant because that's where the gospel advances. And if you study gospel movements throughout history, they always start in places and expand. I mean, if you guys were here on Sunday and heard John from Romania talk, gospel took root in a place, and then it went to another place, and to another place, and to another place, and next thing you know, there's 120 churches that have been established. That's how the gospel moves. It moves from one place to another place, and so that makes it really important. And the verse that I like, there's a lot that we could talk about, but the verse that I like is from Acts chapter 17, and it's this, and he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods in the boundaries of their dwelling place, that God that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us. Steph's holding up. I was going to have my dad hold that up and share about it, but
yeah. Oh, look, it's mine.
We brought this.
Don't steal it.
We delivered all of our Christmas presents on this trip.
Yes.
It's mine.
You may need to come to the middle. I don't know, Dad.
There you go. Gotta hold it up.
Yeah.
So explain it.
Yeah. Well, no, you explain it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about this verse. Chris, you've talked about this verse. And so I often ask the congregation, how many of you chose to move here? And most everybody raise their hands or they were born here. And it's a no. God determined the boundaries and the time when you should live and where you should live, because it's the best place for you to seek him and to be a light and a witness. Yeah, we're not meant to, you know, I was born in the 50s, so I wasn't meant to be in the 30s, right? But now, so with you guys. So this is cool. My son made this. This is all burned into juniper wood, and that's Colorado flag, and this is the boundaries of where Margaret and I and Steph, Carmi and Mike live, and Christine, so... Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Yeah, and as I was burning that, I was thinking about the fact that we moved from Colorado to Oregon to do ministry, to go on mission. And that took us away from my parents. And so as I was burning that, I was thinking about, wow, God took us to Oregon. That's where He wants us to be. And Colorado is where my parents are supposed to be, and that's good. This verse gives me comfort. How many of you have ever thought, "Oh man, I should have been born, 100 years ago," you know? Yeah. We have these thoughts. We get overwhelmed by whatever we see in the moment, and we think, "I wasn't meant for here. I wasn't meant for this time." Well, that verse says wrong. You know, that is a convicting verse. So when I have those thoughts come into my head, often the Holy Spirit reminds me of this verse. Amen. So just be encouraged by that. No, it's the perfect place for you. And what does it say? The perfect place that you might seek God and find Him. The advancement of His gospel. And God is not far. It says God is not far from anyone here. And I would challenge each of us that He is not far from your neighbor. Why? Because you live next door. Think about that. God is not far from your neighbor because you live next door to that neighbor. That's what a powerful opportunity we have with our neighbor. So be encouraged by that. Any other thoughts on that?
Nope, that was good. Love?
Okay. All right, move to the next slide. When we talk about, I think of this as a posture. So you might live in a, well, first of all, how many of you live in a place? Oh, okay, all right. Now, next year you might live in a different place, right? And so when you move into a new place, what kind of posture do you take there? You know, how do you posture yourself in your place? That's kind of what I think about. And this term, faithful presence, for me and for my wife, Steph, it helps us think about how we're posturing ourselves in our neighborhood. Are we being faithful to our neighbors, to God, to who God created us to be and our gifts? Are we faithfully using those? And are we being present? Are we truly, truly listening to people? You know, are we making ourselves available? Are we taking initiative in our place to clean the traffic circle? You know, that's an idea. That's being present in your place. It's seeing a need and it's meeting that need. So this term faithful presence is really helpful for us in thinking about, okay, how do we posture ourselves in every place that we go? Are we being faithfully present? And of course, I think the most beautiful human life ever lived, the most faithfully present person that ever walked this earth was Jesus. And so if you want to know what faithful presence is, just read about Him and learn from Him. And that'd be really helpful. Now, I also in this, I find within me this tug of war that wants to pull me away from faithful presence. And that's what's illustrated by the two arrows. And one tug on me is I want to, it says transcending limitations. You could think of that as you want to have no limits. You want to be the superhero. You want to have all the solutions. In fact, you don't really, it's even the idea of you don't want boundaries in your life. You don't want God to say, no, I don't want you to do that, or you can't do that.
Or it's so just being like a yes person, saying yes to everything without acknowledging that maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this, or maybe this isn't my gift.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's good.
And I would say too, faithful presence for me, I think two words, being consistent in a place repeatedly and being intentional. Mm-hmm. Faithful presence, John Knight, this gets me a little bit, the verbiage, so I like to think about intentionality and consistency. Mm-hmm. I think that is a little, it breaks it down a little bit more. Yeah. But that's just my simple mind.
You have examples of that?
Oh yeah, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
We gotta go in order, John, otherwise we'll like be in the spiral.
Yep, and then the other thing that happens is when we're not faithfully present, we find ourselves kind of ignoring what God has asked you to do, ignoring the responsibility that you have, and that's when we become complacent, unintentional. We become complainers. We complain about everything, but think we have no contribution to that, or no way of helping that solution. So just be aware. I'm sure you guys feel that tension away, or sometimes we get selfish and we just want to have our time. We don't want a neighbor to bother us. We don't want to be confronted with a certain person. So,
but our neighbors also can rescue us when we need our picture taken at 5:20, and John calls Jerry across the street because they know Jerry,
mm-hmm.
and he's over in 2 seconds. And I just happen to make cookies. I'm like, "Hey, Jerry, want a cookie? Can you take our picture?" It was awesome. So it's so helpful to know your neighbors. It really is. They're helpful. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it is a lot of fun.
Okay, let's do the mapping.
Okay, Steph, take it away.
Okay, so this is. We're going to show you a couple pictures about mapping, but when we first moved onto our street, we mapped out, we live in a cul-de-sac, and we put all the houses, we drew our street like this, and then put all the houses around it, and then as we got to know people, we wrote down their names, and then it was really helpful because we have had people live with us since we moved into this house, so we've had a number of people, so whenever we have a new roommate, we'll give them the map. Or when somebody new on the street moves in, I will actually go over there and give them a map. This is where everybody lives, and this is you. And it's really helpful because it's a really intentional way to engage with your neighbor, especially this our newest neighbors. He is a professor and is from, I'm not sure.
Maybe Turkey.
Turkey, yeah. Mm-hmm. And his wife is Japanese. And so she was overseas still, and it was just a really cool way to engage with them. So this isn't, we're going to show some more. So this is a couple that,
just some friends who decided, after that's a talk like this, they went home, and there it is. It really helped them.
The next one is a base up in Washington, Fort Lewis.
Fort Lewis McChord Joint Army Air Force Base. This is some housing on
we
the
went
base.
Up there and did an initiative with a bunch
of
neighbors.
Got to tour their neighborhood.
It was really, really cool.
Really awesome. Yeah. God's doing amazing things in that neighborhood.
Yeah, kind of like more like a college campus.
This is our friend Sam and Kathy down in in San Diego.
So this is a bigger snapshot of your place. So you've got the apartments, you've got the shopping center. So you can also map out even in a boundary, kind of where you live a lot of life.
Yeah.
I don't know Castle Rock well enough to know what that would look like, but that you could actually map out where your bank is, where the grocery store you like. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool to see. And are any of these things walkable too? That's another big thing. Mm-hmm. Can you walk from place to place?
Why is walkable important?
Well, I think walkable is important because you have time to stop and engage and think and pray and really make observations along the way, as opposed to driving, you miss a lot of stuff. So if you can begin to see your place in what is walkable, it's awesome. It's college campuses are great. But if you are able to in any way condense your life and, you guys live so close, it's not ideal because you're walking down Lincoln, but things are walkable. Relatively. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a bigger picture of a way you can map.
Mm-hmm. Coffee?
It ain't walkable if there's no coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Get a coffee.
We live in the Pacific Northwest, known for our coffee. We have at least 15 great coffee shops in our town. So one of the things that this mapping exercise did for me is it convicted me on the fact that in any given week, I was meeting with or going to maybe four or five different coffee shops. So I actually wanted to find one that was walkable and that I would consistently go to. And maybe you can think of good reasons why, missional reasons why that would be a strategic thing to do. We'll get into some of that. But that this mapping exercise really helps you. It helps you to say, maybe I should cut that part of the city out, because for the sake of having some boundaries and having some intentionality and consistency in a place. And this is, so Sam and Kathy, this is their
like macro
large area to live a lot of life in, and then this is their small.
Their actual, so they kind of do the same thing that we did. Like they know who their neighbors are and write it down. So, yeah. Okay, mapping. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Questions? Has anybody done this?
No.
Awesome.
I don't know okay. My neighbor's name. It's like, hey!
Uh-huh. Well, how would this help you remember their name when you learn it?
Right.
Write it down. Yeah, yeah. I forget everything.
I would totally preface with, it is so important to know people's names. Mm. To be a known character, you are known when somebody knows your name. Mm-hmm. And they say it to you, and they look you in the eye, and they remember. Because we live in a culture where we don't remember anything. We don't know anybody's phone number. We don't know their name, because we're dumb. We look at our phone. So I think there's something really to be said about knowing people's names. And so I just would encourage you to, and if you're not great at remembering names, write them down. Or another tool that I've heard is helpful, and I think it is, as you are introduced to somebody, say their name 3 times if you can in that conversation. Hey, it's great to see you, Joe. Oh, nice to meet you, Joey. I mean, it sort of sounds redundant, but be like, hey, Joey, what's your wife's name? You know, just like to use the name. And if your name is harder to remember, you always have a little catch name, you know, like, this is how you remember my name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have always remembered that because of that. So, know people's names. That is huge.
Yeah, it honors them. It makes them human.
Yeah.
Like, so let's just be human together.
And I'll talk more about our friend Tom, but I swim with Tom, and he has on his, when he meets somebody new at the pool, he'll put their name in his phone, and then I'm like tall Steph, but everybody has a name and like a little catch thing. Green suit or from Nebraska. And he has this kind of name for everybody, and he remembers. And he's my wingman. And so if one of us doesn't know where somebody is new at the pool, I'll be like, hey, Tom, did you see this new person? Oh, yeah, I know who that is. So it's been really helpful because he's brought it up at the table a couple times. We're like, Tom, do you remember that? And he'll like scroll through his list.
I think last time we had dinner with them, we said, so Tom, what did you write when you met Steph?
I don't know.
Tall Steph. Really good swimmer, really nice, really nice. And then he had written down husband John. Like he had all these details.
Yeah.
Every time he had a conversation, he would go on his phone and add another detail.
That was really cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Not a Christian. Praying for him.
Yeah, he's our.
We will talk. We'll show you pictures of him in a second.
Okay, so this is my pool people.
Speaking of pool. Okay, this is. Steph wants to, wanted her to share a couple of places that she is faithfully present, consistent, intentional. And that's what
so I grew up swimming. We're early morning people. And about 4 years ago, I was like, I need to start coming really consistently at the same time. Because depending on a work schedule or school, I was kind of hit or miss, like 7, 6:30. And I just needed to pick a time. So 5:30. I'm at the pool pretty much every weekday. And it's been really cool to see the consistency of that and having the same faces. And I know the people that come Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I know the Tuesday, Thursday group. Tom not only comes on Wednesdays, but there's something about being consistent. So you all may or may not have those places, but think about being consistent somewhere because it really works. And over the course of a year, you'd be amazed at how much you can learn about a person in 2 minutes every day or every other day. So 5:30 a.m., Tom is the first person I meet. He is in his mid-60s. He's a cardiologist in Corvallis. Probably the most unlikely friend I would ever have, and he and his wife are great friends of ours. And so Tom's my wingman. He also gets names, and he comes up. We collaborate on activities together. So I really wanted to have Tom and Marilyn over, and so we invited them over for dinner around Christmas time a few years ago, and it was great. It was really, we had a really good time, and I just felt like, all right, there's more. So one day I was swimming, and I stopped at the wall, and I said, Tom, I have this crazy idea. What do you think if we did a pool potluck? And we had all of our people, like, come when we're with our spouses. He's like, I can't believe you said that. I was going to ask you about that. I was like, really? He does not know Jesus, but he is like, he thinks like Jesus. It's really cool. So we ended up developing an email list. And I got everybody's name, and here it is, the pool. So you can imagine it's like my paper is crinkled and all the, you know, the ink is dripping off of it. But by the end of it, I have an email list of like 25 people. And we decided to have one, pretty much have one like biannually now, like a winter one and a summer one. And so this is our latest one, and we had a shrimp boil. So fun. So Liz and her husband hosted it, and they kind of live out in the country. And Liz is right there. And she's a hoot. She's a veterinarian at OSU. But they have property, and they just have this huge pot, and we did a shrimp boil, and you just dump all this really good food on the table, and that's her husband right there. So we did that in June. And the kids come to this, and spouses, and so it was really fun. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of the pool and my, like, intentionality there. And John just comes along, and it's fun.
He tag along. All the spouses, we all are like, aren't our spouses crazy for swimming at 5:30 a.m.? You know, it was a very bonding experience for all of us. Like, we all felt the same way.
That's right.
Just crazy people we're married to.
I know.
Yeah, but it is super fun.
Because we all have our weird quirkinesses. Like, mm-hmm. I only swim on the right side of the lane, and Tom only takes this lane, and Chris
and some people only share with certain people.
Yep. It's just weird. It's a weird thing. But
Chris won't share with anybody but you.
Right.
Because so he's got one leg amputated, and so he kind of takes up more of the lane. But Steph's like, I can...
And Liz. Yeah. Liz swims with him too.
It's okay. Fun. What about...
Let's move on to this
okay,
one.
Okay, go ahead.
So you have the clicker.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I have the pointer.
There's so many cool stories.
This is a farmer's market, and I started working about... I guess all of our... 4 or 5 years ago is when I feel like God really started laying intentionality on our hearts. So you're going to see like some time frames here. But we jumped on the cliche bandwagon of eating locally. And you can do that in the place that we live. So I'm not going to say this is for everybody. But a lot of things grow in our area. And I love to cook. And so we decided we're gonna give this a whirl. So what that forced us to do was be consistent at our farmer's market. And we have a really pretty cool farmer's market. So we started shopping at specific vendors, and then you get to know their names, and you come back every week. And kind of off the cuff one day, I had met this girl named Laura. I was like, Laura, if you ever need any help at the produce stand, let me know. And this is this really cool organic farm that has the best stand of anybody in the whole farmer's market. And then they've got a restaurant. I mean, it's like a pretty sweet place. So sure enough, she's like, I got an opening. I need help on Wednesdays. And our boys were at public school at the time. So I started working farmer's market. And it's a sweet deal. I get free produce, but then you get to know all the other vendors. And that is where it gets really fun. So then a year later, I meet Mariano, and he is an Argentinian cheese seller. And he needed some help. So I would work produce and I would work cheese. And I realized that I really like working cheese because it is a high commodity. Everybody wants to trade cheese. So we started the barter system at the farmer's market, and you get to know everybody. So you're around in between, or actually I'll have John and the boys will come and stand in the stand, and I'll go and do all my trading. So I mean, you cannot believe what I've traded. Everything you can think of, I've traded cheese. And my boss is awesome. So I actually will start, I work Saturdays from beginning of April through right before Thanksgiving. I'm going to take the whole stand now for him because he's going to work up in Portland. So it's just this relationship. And then he had a wedding to go to about 2 years ago. So John and I stepped in and like actually went to his house. He converted his garage to a refrigeration
He ages his cheese and his.
We actually were like, if anybody wants to know about cheese, you actually have to like scrub it. It molds and you scrub it. It's
kind of you got to clean it all off.
It's
a lot of work.
It's really cool. So we actually like stepped in, and John got to jump in on the whole thing with me for a month. And we did this while he was in Argentina at his brother's wedding. Mm-hmm. So it would be like these kind of things I would never come up with, but because you get to know people, mm-hmm. you realize, hey, they have a family, and I think it gave us. It was more than just buying food. It was like, wow, we know who made this. I'm going to support the family. So it might cost $2 more a pound than Safeway, but it was about the relationship for us. And so we chose to do this, and God has provided in other ways because it's not cheap to do this, but he has just been faithful, I think, just to honor the heart in it. So the boys will come and they get paid. I'll give them a little stipend to help me work. As well. So.
Okay, enough about our stories.
Yes.
We'd love to hear if these stories have triggered anything for you that you've tried, ways that you've been intentional. I'm guessing in this room, you guys, you're intentional people. You've done some things. What have you tried? What have you done?
And just
it could totally be a failure, too. You could say, I tried this and it just bombed. But what have you done to be intentional with your neighbors, with your city, with your place? Speak loud if you got something.
Throw it out.
Come on. Don't be shy.
Okay, last spring, I guess. There's 40 houses on our street, and I made up an invitation.
Can everybody hear?
I made up an invitation for everybody to... For the women of in any of these homes to come over on a certain day and time and just like have coffee and a little something or whatever. Mm. And very few people actually were available to answer their door. I got some Ring doorbell people. Some people I just had to leave the invitation hanging on their door. Mm. I had like 6 people respond, but only 4 people showed up. And I was actually told that, you know, 10% was, like, kind of, you could go, that would be, and that's what I got. I got 4 out of 40. I don't know how many women live in each house, but anyway, it was nice. They were mostly the neighbors that lived right around me. I knew them all except 2.
Okay.
And it was a good experience, and I want to do more things like that, but, you know, it's hard when people don't answer their doors, and you can't. You know, the street curves, and you don't see who. And I know that I probably need to walk more so that I can get to know more people, but I just don't find that I get out of the house and walk around.
We got a dog.
Yeah, a dog.
It's sort of radical. A dog's not for everybody, but dogs get you out and make you walk.
It's that you didn't want a dog for years.
Oh, it's a miracle that we have a dog.
Their dogs are thoroughbred.
Pretty awesome. That's such a great example on a lot of different levels. One, in faith, you put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. Two, you realize something maybe about the culture, or I doubt if that's just your neighbor. And it's awesome because we're going to show a video in a second, and it's going to be really funny. But it's going to highlight exactly what you said. Just that obstacle of like doorbells and how our culture kind of responds to that now. But anybody else, an idea, something you tried?
What I was thinking is a flat pack. So in the event that you couldn't get out, you could go to the county clerk's office and go to the taxes, and you could actually see who owns properties in your neighborhood in the event that they never got out. So that when you did go to present yourself, you already knew their name.
So you can creep on your neighbors?
That's what the next door has for it.
By the way.
I had to find out who owned the mineral interest underneath the surface.
Yeah.
And whenever I saw the, I don't know if it was the second presentation on the screen, that's exactly what it reminded me of.
No. Sure. Anything to get a conversation going, even if it's like, hey, I already know your name. That's awesome. No, I think that's great. It's intentional. Yeah.
So I was just thinking, you guys were saying, what's a place that you go to consistently every day?
Mm.
And I was like, well, I go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not great at this in our neighborhood. We have some relationships with our neighbors, but not super close. but I am a high school teacher, and so that's one place that I can be super intentional.
Yeah.
And my students know that during my off hour, my door is always open, and I'll like make coffee and tea, and sometimes I'll pop popcorn because then that like wafts into the hallway.
Yeah.
So even if your schedule doesn't allow for, you know, like leisurely coffee visits or whatever, being intentional at your workplace.
Absolutely.
Too.
Oh, for
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
So food is good.
Yeah.
The other thing is use what you have. Like we have a snow blower and stuff.
Yes.
Snow blower ministry.
Awesome.
I'll give you an example, and I'll talk about a failure turned into a little bit of success. So our neighbors right across the street from us, they're from Texas. When he was alive, we couldn't be, we're like opposite spectrum of the political views. And so we got into a discussion, and we decided that we probably need to have that conversation in the future. But so long story short, but I would still like, I'd see him at the mailbox, you know, or whatever. And he was a photographer, so he would go like fly somewhere and take pictures or whatever, get back. And he's always smoking a cigar, you know, early in the morning reading something. So we'd wave to him. When I got home, I'd go by, say hi to him, all that type of stuff. Then we had a storm a couple years back, you know, where everybody got new roofs and windows and all that type of stuff. So go talk about that. But long story short is I hadn't seen him for like a few months. And I know his son, Michael. So their son lives with them. He's like 40, but he lives with them. And I said, I went over one morning right before we were heading to here, and I said, hey, I hadn't seen your dad in a while. You know, where's he been? And he said he passed away. So I was like, oh, why did I, you know, not, what? And that was a sign, like, we're too busy. We need to, like, slow down and, like, see what's going on the neighborhood. Yeah. So just talked to mom. So like we just had this storm and I went over and helped her. And I said, hey, you want me to do your driveway real quick? Because Darren's not there anymore. And she goes, no, I'll do this part because it's either go to the gym or do this. And I prefer this. So I did her sidewalks and I just got a chance to talk with her. And she just said, hey, Michael just got a job. He's going to be driving. So it's just an opportunity to like catch up.
Yeah.
Totally. But use what you have.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's so good.
Great.
John and I were talking today about the fact that every time Jesus interacted with a person, for the most part, that person was in crisis mode. Demon possessed, really sick, kid died, I mean,
crazy sin.
Yeah, crazy sin. And one of the things I love about John's stuff is that when people get into crisis mode, if they don't have a relationship with you, are they going to call him? Are they going to, hey, you know, please help, please pray for us, you know, whatever. Because most of the people that you develop relationships with, they're not in crisis mode at this point. They don't have a need for Jesus, but guess what's going to happen? So you're not always going to get to share the gospel right away. So Jerry, my neighbor across the street, a retired judge, and his wife, Pam, and we got to know them, and I called him up to take a picture over, and he ripped on the camera. but it's just great, you know. We took John's car to the place where I go, Brakes Plus, and I know the owner. His name's Russ, and I go in and talk to Russ all the time. And Russ, at the time, doesn't need Jesus right now. But someday, something's going to happen in his life, and I might be there, and I might be able to help him with that spirit.
Absolutely.
You know? But just think about Jesus. You know, of the people that Jesus interacted with 6 months ago, they probably were not in crisis mode.
That's such a great point, because I think that's one thing that I love what John shared yesterday, is that we can't jump into how do I share my faith with someone if you don't have a relationship. It has to start with, do I know this person? Do I care for them? Do I have empathy for them? Do I know what their needs are? And then you develop the relationship. But you have to first even want to know your neighbor. And I think that's the biggest thing, is do we even want to know our neighbors?
We kind of joke in our neighborhood, like we're kind of surrounded by partiers, a lot of partying. So it's like, 4th of July, party! You know what I mean? Like, Tuesday,
any excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you live in Spain?
Yeah.
You must be living in Spain.
But it's hilarious because I'm the guy on the block that looks like he parties. So
you.
So, They all. I mean, people tend to just they come and they talk and they usually cool. assume my party. So the great thing is I don't, but I get to have the conversation. So from that though, getting to know my neighbors, and as you guys know, like I openly talk, like, oh yeah, actually I used to party pretty hard, and that's why I no longer party. So, but my neighbors know, and on multiple times since, though we don't attend many of the parties because it's usually pretty crazy, a lot of heavy drinking, I mean, all nighters, you know, garage doors open, come out in the morning, I'm like, hey, good morning, everybody all right over there?
Like, yeah, I mean, is there opportunity to help people? I mean,
my neighbor can come and talk to me about his own personal alcoholism. And then when his fiance was in the hospital, he came to me and said, hey, this is going on. And I was able to go and be there and pray with them. And then another neighbor in crisis across the street with their son. And I was, you know, out mowing my lawn. And she was like, I knew you were a pastor. Can you come help?
Yeah.
You know, and so being in that, but just those opportunities that come about from being present.
Yep, and knowing them. So when we've had four deaths on our street, one of which most recently was my grandma. And so it's just interesting when you know people, you can enter into suffering with them. You know, the compassion John was talking about, common suffering. And it works because, John, you nailed it, because people aren't going to call you when they're in the crisis, but it's amazing how many people live in isolation. Yeah. It breaks my heart that my neighbors, they live in isolation, and we live in a really nice community and a really nice street. So,
Our neighbor John and Penny, John's father died recently, and he would always be walking over to see his dad. We knew his dad's health problems, but the only reason we knew that his dad died is because John and Penny would bring over their newspapers to us because we have a wood fireplace. And they knew newspapers are a great fire starter. And so they would always bring their newspapers. And what ended up happening is the newspapers were piling up. And Steph and I were like, we don't need any more newspapers. But we can't tell them.
I'll just recycle them.
So we didn't tell them. And the reason, and this, again, this flew out of prayer for sure, but we didn't want them to stop coming over every week to give us their newspaper, because every time they came to our door, we had a conversation. And one time, it was, John, how's it? I saw him. How you doing? And instantly his face was like, I'm not good. My dad died. You know, we wouldn't have known that if God in prayer didn't prompt our hearts to say, let's take care of their newspapers for them. And
so we have a
so awesome. I mean, really.
Yeah, and I said, can I bring a meal over to you? He's like, that'd be great. Can you bring some of my grandma? Everyone calls her Graham. Can you bring some of Graham's baked beans? And he knew that because of the block party. So it's just like this cool relationship.
What hinders us from loving our neighbors? And you don't see them,
You don't see them. Okay, so why? But maybe why? Why are some of the reasons we don't see our neighbors? Like, let's just
go in the garage. And close the garage. And you don't see them.
Yep. Open the garage door, and then you turn. Then as soon as you drive in, and then you shut your garage door. Okay, what else?
The season.
Yeah.
Seasons are an obstacle.
Absolutely. I'm always nervous that I won't be well received. That they really don't want anything to do with me. So.
Oh man,
See, you don't have to jump up and go share Jesus with them. You go up and share yourself with them. Charlie, you are such a neat guy. Why would anybody say, wow, I don't know.
Most people are busy now.
Busy.
Yep.
You have five grocery bags in your hand and you just want to get into the house.
But let's not discount insecurity. I mean, that's something that we all face. And I think God wants to give us confidence in who he says you are and what he says is true of you. And so the more you can feed on that truth, I think the more you'll be able to put yourself out and not care so much what people think about you. But don't discredit your own insecurity as an obstacle. It is an obstacle, and it can be an obstacle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I noticed? I grew up in the Midwest, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And the side yard opens up to the neighbor's side yard. There's no fence.
Yeah.
Backyard opens up to the neighbor's backyard. There's no fence.
Right.
And we lived in California a long time. Now we moved here about 4 years ago. every house has fences.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a purposeful barrier.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it's called privacy fence.
Yeah. And somebody said it before. People just keep to themselves. And not that I can do anything about fences, but the fences don't help.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they're barriers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great point.
And I don't know if you can talk on that at all.
Yeah, we have.
We know a story. There's a radical story about some neighbors that got together, and they basically what they decided is to knock. They all agreed. They all had fences, and they knocked all the fences down and created a common space. And they actually put a jungle gym, like a playground for the kids to play in.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible.
Yeah.
Again, you have to know your neighbors to do that. But they all were in the agreement. Like, we need to do something. Another thing that is like a. We have community garden plots. Do you guys have those out here? Where like neighborhood community, like, and that is a really cool way to create like some sort of community that you're like buying into
common
something.
Space.
Uh-huh.
Move your backyard space to your front yard. If you have kids, don't put the playground in the front. Put it in the front yard. I know HOAs sometimes won't allow that, but.
Okay, yeah. So Kelly,
your HOA allow? What can you possibly get away with? You know, can you put a little paver patio out there with a chair? You know,
so, they can tell you.
You know, yeah.
I did do that. Uh-huh. The front of our house is the nasty cold, snowy side.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But in the summertime, it's the shaded part, and so I don't want to sit in the back really in the summer because it's pretty hot.
Mm.
And I had this area that was like a big planter, but nothing really grew there when we moved in because of the shade. And I kind of leveled it all out, and I put a picnic table in the front.
Awesome.
Great.
So I wasn't sure if HOA was going to say anything about that. They haven't, but it's like it's literally touching my house, so it's butted right up to my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not like out in the grass or anything. But I did that exactly for that reason.
That's awesome.
So that I have a place to sit outside because if I sit in the back, I'll never see any neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we actually moved our garden into the front yard, and we call it a yarden. So we moved the garden to the front, and I guess there's a lot of people in our town.
It looks really cool.
It is cool. John makes things beautiful, so it looks really cool. But it has created so much community with our neighbors. So it was an intentional move because we've dumped a lot of money into the backyard, and we decided, well, we're going to move it to the front.
It didn't get enough sun.
Right.
So it was selfish, but it was also strategic.
Right.
Yeah.
Another thing that we know, some friends actually moved their grill to the front.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually grill out in the front. When we do our barbecues, we roll our grill out
to the street.
To the street.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways, if anything, this is just ideas to get you guys like thinking about your specific place and what could work. The parameters, I don't really know, but
yeah. Do we have? I mean, are there engineers? There's a lot of engineers around here, right?
Right.
So one of the things we talk about is that in the church, God has equipped people to be engineers, to be designers, to be architects. What if we were to start, as Christians, start designing neighborhoods that were conducive to community? No fences, common gathering spaces. You are actually starting to see that in some places, but a lot of suburbia lives in neighborhoods that are designed for cars, honestly. They're designed for cars. You have a garage, you pull in, and you close it up. And then they have these HOA rules that restrict. So it's an obstacle. Our neighborhood doesn't have those HOA rules, but when we bought our house, there was an old covenant, and it's not enforced. But in that covenant is, it's old language, but it was part of our history. You're not supposed to sell your house to somebody who's black. Now talk about an obstacle, right? And that there was a strong KKK presence in our town, all the way up, 60s, 70s. I mean, it was really, really that way. So there are a lot of obstacles we run up against that are completely working against the advancement of the gospel, and those are good to acknowledge. Yeah.
One of the things you said this weekend was pray.
Yeah.
Pray for your neighbor. Pray that you'll have an encounter which has to be delivered. I mean, Jesus went through Samaria to meet with a woman in a well who had been married 4 or 5 times.
That's intentional.
Yeah.
You gotta pray and you gotta make yourself get out there. You know?
Absolutely.
Winter time's tough, but walking a dog is really good.
It is.
Yep.
It's really good for getting out there.
Yeah, and there was a couple that shared a year ago at one of the initiatives that we went to, and they got a dog for that very reason. And it was a young couple, newly married, and she said they got to know so many of their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm a fan. It works. It does work. And it's not for everybody, but there's little things you could do. Like you could put poop bags up in on your street for the neighbors who are walking a dog, even if you don't
stop.
Yeah, they need to stop.
Then you can stake out at your front window when they stop. Go out there, you know? Like, hey, what's your name? You know? Like, we did that at our mailbox.
Yeah.
Three of my neighbors that have Corvettes.
Mm-hmm.
Guy down the street, his name's Arthur, and he's got a classic Jet. So those of you guys who are in the car, Steve, you're big time in the cars, and so get to stop and talk with Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
The dog's name's Chewy, you know, just trying to get to know him.
Yeah.
But the Corvette was the conversation piece for me. Wouldn't have been for Margaret.
Yeah.
So you look for connections. You look for bridges. Joey and I talk about bridges all the time. Bridges to cross.
Oh, yeah.
With somebody.
Pray for those. Pray for those.
Yeah,
yeah, it often won't happen without prayer. Mm-hmm. But we should, let's move. So just be thinking about obstacles and know that they're out there. But also know, like, through prayer and the power of God, He can overcome any of those obstacles. I mean, how many obstacles did God have to overcome to get us to even want Him? So, yeah.
Yeah. Especially coincidences, it's like God acting anonymously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a sign that God is in this. And when he talks about how Jesus looked and saw where his Father was working, I never understood it until I realized that it was like when you can see him working in somebody else's life or something. And sometimes there's just like a big stop sign and there really isn't anything. So the time might not be right, but you still try to get to know him.
Pray for another encounter.
Yeah. And when you're in conversation with somebody and you come across that coincidence, go write it down and pray about it. You know, like, when you hear something, that's one thing where let's move on to some action steps. But we're going to talk about things that we can be intentional about doing. And one of those is writing things down when you hear it. But hearing is important. Are we really listening when we're having those conversations? So here are some action steps. We're going to go through each of these a little bit. We won't take a lot of time, but knowing, serving, hosting, and teaming. These aren't all action steps. This doesn't encompass everything, but these are some of the things that we talk a lot about, and by knowing, let's go to knowing. I think Steph said it really well earlier. If your ultimate desire is to be used by God to bring people to salvation through Jesus Christ, you have to know them, and they have to know you. I mean, it starts by being known and them knowing you and developing this relationship of trust. And so that's what we mean by knowing. And it needs to start with praying. Everything starts with prayer. So if there's somebody you want to get to know, your neighbor, well, pray that God would give you a supernatural interaction at some point with them. And so praying for us, I don't know. I mean, we do a lot of things that help weekly remind us to pray. We try to pray every morning together and every evening, so that there's kind of these times throughout the day that go that we know we're going to be together, and we know that we want to start our day and end our day that way. And then we also will prayer walk a lot in our neighborhood. Just saturating all of your life and all of your desires in prayer. And it's amazing how God wants, He wants to show up, He wants to answer those prayers, and He will. So praying. The next thing would be engaging. And this is just, like it's already been said, taking initiatives, trying things. I remember one guy saying, I think God wants control of your imagination. And oftentimes it's Satan who has control of it. Our imaginations can be a tool used for God's glory, don't you think? I think He can redeem our imagination. So what are we imagining? How are we experimenting? What are we trying? And are we asking God, God, give me an imagination that is creative here. This seems like an unbearable obstacle. And I really know that God wants, He wants to have control of your imagination, and He wants you to imagine amazing things. What He is capable of doing. So engage in that. Another big part of knowing is being a good listener. And this is going to be, come more naturally for some. For others, it's going to be really hard. I don't know. Often I find myself in conversation, and I'm thinking more about how I want to respond or what I want to say than to what they're actually saying. And that just takes a lot of prayer, intentionality of engaging and listening. But you can't really know well unless you listen well. Mm-hmm. So listen well. And another thing I would say is listen to your neighborhood. And that sounds weird, but listen to the environment. What is the environment saying? What is it screaming out? What is it telling you? Like I said, listening to our neighborhood was listening to the old covenants and realizing there are certain people that didn't want certain types of people in this neighborhood. So the neighborhood is speaking to me, and as I look and I see, well, who lives here? Well, they all start to look the same. Well, I wonder why. You know, there's something behind that. So your neighborhood wants to speak to you. Listen to it.
And I would say, too, if you move into a new place, don't go in and try and change it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't go in and mm-hmm. Wow, I got all these ideas, because you might be stepping on someone's toes. So be aware of what other things might already be happening in your neighborhood or in your place or in your workplace, whatever that might be. And just be in tune to that, too.
Yeah, we talk about consulting the stakeholders. Who has lived in your neighborhood for years and years and years? Get to know them. Ask them, what's this neighborhood been like? What's the history of this place? I mean, you might find out some interesting things, and you might see that they've been invested in there for a long time, and you can come alongside of their initiatives. So, consult the stakeholders. And then the last thing we talked about already is write stuff down, record it, write it down. When you learn stuff, just write it down. Have a place that you and your wife or your kids are always going to go to, and write information down as you learn. So. Knowing is a huge step. The next step is serving. And obviously, if you want to be first in the kingdom of God, you need to learn to be what? The servant of all. Who's our example? Jesus. Steph, take it away on this one.
Okay, so our neighbors, Brett and Aaron, they live at the end of the cul-de-sac. They have a little guy who's like 5. And we've had this cool reciprocal relationship with them, but they had some plumbing issues, and John has come in and been a handyman and helped rescue them out of some plumbing stuff. And he has this huge heart, and he's like, I just don't feel all right about just letting you just do this. If there's anything you ever need. And we're kind of like, all right, well, we'll let you know. Well, as it turns out, we ended up homeschooling and pulling our kids out of public school a few years ago. And are trying to engage them in some different types of academics. And he teaches Photoshop at
Chemeketa.
It's a community college. And we knew this because somehow it had come up in conversation. But for a couple of years, he has done our Christmas card. And so that's kind of another story. But we ended up having our kids do a Photoshop class with him. And it was so cool. So he came over and taught them Photoshop. So the hope was that they could do our Christmas card for us and not him. But he has done a Christmas card where our kids are flying through the air, and there's, you know, they've got their lightsabers, and our dog, the first year, she's floating in the air. He's got the books levitating. It's super cool. So we thought, what a cool way to engage in his world, and so we wanted our kids to learn from him. So since then, our boys have pet sat for them, and we've done some more construction, and John and the boys helped him raise up their, there's like a barn swing raising set. For their swing set. Mm-hmm. So I think just the reciprocal relationship about serving. So like John was able to use his gifts of construction and being a handyman, and then Brett was able to use his gifts in his vocation. So yeah, that's it.
And then, there's an exercise that we don't have time to go into it, but we call it asset mapping, and it's exactly what you were talking about, Joey. What do you have? So what are the assets in your neighborhood? These could be things, it could be money, it could be a special talent or skill that you have. It could be you're really good at baking. If we were to pool the assets in our neighborhood, we would realize how wealthy we collectively are. And so that's a fun exercise. You have to really know people in order to do it. So it's not something you can do, but as you get to know people, how many snowblowers do you actually need on your street? I really think consumerism keeps people isolated. Think about that. Like, we're told you need this, you need this, and then you need to protect this, you need to protect this, instead of, wow, I want to share my things, I want to share what I have. And so, yeah, the more opportunities you get, it just opens up so many doors so looking for ways to... Another story of serving. So this is Brett in the middle and Craig.
Wait,
and myself.
Where's the pointer?
Huh? Oh, Steph has a pointer.
Can't find it.
But these guys have become really good friends of mine. They don't know Jesus yet. They don't know Jesus yet. That's Brett. That's Craig. And we got to know each other by serving together. We served on our boys' soccer team. We signed up for the soccer and had no coach. And these three dads right here did not play soccer. But there was a need, right? There was a need. And I said, I'll do it, but I want to do it with as a team with a couple other dads. And these three dads stepped up. We had the most fun of any team in that league. It was awesome.
Yeah,
these guys were great. I knew I had to travel for the Navigators a few times during the season, and that's why I said up front I need more people. These guys stepped right in.
Yeah, because Brett is an ER doctor, mm-hmm. and then
so his schedule is all over the place.
And Craig is an engineer. So between the three of them, they always had practice and game covered. But they all kind of went in practicing travel, and this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
But we all went out right before Christmas with all of our kids and wives and went to an Oregon State women's basketball game. Mm-hmm. It was a blast.
Yeah. And so their kids are friends with our kids. We have game night once a month, actual like old school board games that kids love to play, believe it or not, once a month at our house, and their kids are a part of that. So this has just been two guys that God's given me. I'm praying for these guys all the time, praying for, neither of them are in crisis mode. You know, they're ER doctor, HP engineer, their lives are together, you know, and they have amazing marriages, their wives, their relationship. We love, I just respect how they treat their kids, how they raise their kids. So at this point, there's just not that need or that desire, but they know who we are, they know what we do, they know what we're about, and
Lord has to do that.
Yeah, God's got to open up their heart and change their desire. So serving, that's a way to serve together. Steph has served at our boys' elementary school when they were in school. You know, tell them a little bit about that.
Okay. When our kids were in public school, I volunteered in the classroom. That's where it started, because I was like, how am I going to get in and know what's happening, get to know the teachers? So I volunteered in their classroom, and that led to getting to know the teachers and one of which I loved, and I prayed. I was terrified to do this, but I just prayed, and I was like, Emma, this is kind of weird, but can I take you out for coffee? I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm breaching some sort of, like, teacher-mom relationship that's not okay. And she's like, absolutely. So we went out, and I was like, of course. We started this friendship, and that lasted the whole year. At the end of the year, we decided to invite both of the kids' teachers and their husbands over for, like, a thank-you dinner. And we grilled out in the backyard, and super fun. And through that conversation, found out that one of the teachers plays volleyball. And I was like, my husband plays volleyball. She's like, really? We're looking for someone that's a co-ed team. So John got invited to play on the teacher's volleyball team. And
the only non-teacher.
The only non-teacher. Yeah. And he's still doing it. He's missed a couple games on this trip. But
we're undefeated, by the way. I need to get home. you don't understand. We leave at 5 p.m.
So anyways, oh. I mean, that's just a snap. So just cool how, and I think I want to just encourage all of you, it's a progression. So the stories that we're sharing have been over time, and they do take time, but you start somewhere. Try it out. If that doesn't work, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Try something else, but know that it builds.
Yeah.
That it builds.
And that's a good illustration of the next slide is just hospitality, opening up your home. That's what we did for the teachers. And it was. We put ourselves out there. I mean, we prayed.
I was
God,
so nervous.
Should we do this? Is this your idea? Because this is kind of weird. Nobody does this. Nobody does this that we know.
And it was
amazing. Our son's teacher's boyfriend was doing crazy flips on our trampoline with our kids in the backyard that night. We'd never met him before. Came over, and he's flipping on the trampoline with our boys. I mean, it was just a blessed time by God. So, hospitality, we're going to... did you catch that definition? It's a cool definition. Hospitality, it's a big thing, and it's very, very scriptural. All throughout Scripture, there's commandments to be hospitable to strangers. There's qualifications of being an elder in the church is that you are given to hospitality. In a few places Paul just commands it, like, be hospitable, show hospitality. So it's biblical, it's missional.
I'd love to speak on simple. Yeah. If you're a person that is really anxious about hospitality, like you're just maybe insecure about hosting, or you're apprehensive about having people into your home.
Your house is a mess.
Maybe I would just say keep it simple. You don't have to cook a 5-course meal. People like simple, and they like to be in places where it's not perfect, because then they feel like they couldn't reciprocate. Because they feel like, this is just, that's the house that's too perfect. So
do it with somebody else. Yeah. Somebody over that's a Christian brother or sister.
Absolutely.
Jesus
can do that.
Sent the disciples out in pairs.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a reason.
Yeah.
But start somewhere.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in a home that was hospitable at all. And when I became a Christian, God, it was a gift that I didn't even know was there. It was like basically just flowered. And this flower, and I had no idea, I didn't even know what to do with it, but I didn't grow up that way. So I would just say try it, and potlucks are always great too. It's not always on you.
Mm-hmm. So let other people contribute.
Yeah, people
that like was part of the joy. I like that last, the old guy at the end. Yeah. You think he's not going to come out, but he comes, he's like, I got to bring something.
Yeah, yeah. Let people cool. bring stuff.
Yep. So. For the sake of time, and we'll transition to the next thing, which is exactly, my dad's already thinking ahead here, the idea of teaming. And that is so true. There's something powerful about doing this in community with other people, and teaming up with other people. I've got four kind of circles, and they just represent different kinds of people that you can team with. All right, so the first circle I would say is your committed believers. Your the people that have your back, and you know you're on the same page, right? You get together. They're the people that you would trust. You could call them up and invite them over to, you're having somebody who's not a Christian over. You trust them to come right in, and you know they're thinking missionally.
They can carry on the conversation. Yeah. They can go there. You can leave them.
Or maybe they even go places that you can't because they're new and they're Christian. You know, we have people in our life and team up with them. The next kind of bigger circle is just the body of Christ. Christians all over your city. You know, there's probably a mega church right in your neighborhood. It's percentage-wise, right? Statistics show, you know, maybe 20% of your neighbors would claim to be a Christian. Those are people you can team with in different ways. Citizens, we think of the citizens of your place, just the people that live in your town. There are things you can do and team up with them, like Steph has shared about Tom in Maryland. So let's just... collaborators are people across places, across cities that you can collaborate with at times to team up, to get nourishment, refreshment, ideas, energy. And that would be honestly, for Steph and I, that's doing this right here. We're receiving energy by talking with you guys about this, and we're so excited to go back to our city. We're collaborating with you, and now we get to go back and experiment some more. So just some quick stories. This is... really long, cool story of my great friend Ray and our mentor in a lot of ways. He's my fishing mentor, is what he is. But it took a while to get to know Ray and his wife Catherine because they're very introverted. But we forced ourselves into their life, and I honestly had selfish motivations. He had a boat, and I wanted to learn how to fish, and it worked out. But we ended up teaming, and I didn't even know it. But I was teaming with him. What happened was he had a group of coworkers. He worked for Oregon Department of Transportation, and he would invite his coworkers to come fishing, and then he would save a spot for me to go with them. And later on, I found out that he liked that. So he's an introverted guy, but he liked that because I would get into conversations with his coworkers, and he could listen in, and it helped. And I would end up talking about things that they couldn't really talk about at the workplace, either. You know, it's kind of taboo or whatever. But there was a space there that for me to come in and team with him for him to. To develop his relationship with his coworkers. And I just, wow, I didn't realize that God was doing that. And that was pretty cool to learn. So teaming with, and also Ray was, he was our partner in crime on the street, you know, with our neighbors. He really was our teammate.
And the big part of the story is his wife, they were on vacation and his wife had a massive heart attack in the water while they were snorkeling, and she passed away in the Virgin Islands. Yeah. And we got an email along with his kids, we were the only ones on it, and so he was. So we entered into grief with him.
Crisis
and,
mode.
Mm-hmm. 4 months later, he met a lady named Laura, and he asked John and I to marry them. So we did
premarital counseling.
We did premarital counseling with them, and loved. They both loved Jesus. We're like, right, I think we need to have marriage counseling from you guys.
Yeah, that's what we said. We'll do it.
So
with
we did
you
marriage counseling with counsel them. Us. We're like, we've been married only 15 years, or 14 years. So, anyways, it's a powerful story. And
amazing
so they moved
story.
Up to Salem, where she's from. And Ray is he has the vision, and he has been. He knows his neighbors. Like goes and delivers tuna to all the neighbors.
That's a tuna. That's an albacore tuna, by the way.
So, anyways, it's really cool. We need to keep
yummy. Okay.
I'm like the time person. And
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm like
okay.
Time and I'm
this is our person. This is our church community right here. This is our Christians. These are the people that we worship God with, that we live a lot of life with, and they are our team. This is Tom and Marilyn. They are citizens of our city. They are not yet followers of Jesus. They have become our good friends, and this is Steph's teammate in the pool.
Yep. And they take us to really cool places, and
they're
they
like
have,
wine club members at this
so
vineyard.
We
live in like amazing vineyard country.
We've had Thanksgiving with them the last 2 years, and we have a standing invitation. So we've committed.
They
to,
like having us there. We're their teammate at Thanksgiving. I don't know why. Their son is a Christian, though. And so we feel like, in some ways, Daniel is our teammate at Thanksgiving because he's the only other Christian there. And so we get into a lot of conversations with Daniel, and Tom and Marilyn are listening. So it's really interesting. God's doing that, something there. The other thing I would say is Tom and Marilyn want to hang out with us. That's weird. We're young, not, you know, like, we're not really in their age range. But the other woman, Kirsten, that you guys swim with, Tom also wants to hang out with Kirsten and her husband, and they're Christians. So that's really weird. Is God doing something? Yeah. Why do they want to hang out with Christians when they're not? And they you know, anyway, God's up to something there. So, and then this is a gathering in our backyard. These are people that live in Oregon and Washington who came to our house to tour our neighborhood and ask us kind of what we're doing right now. These are our collaborators. These are people that live in other neighborhoods in the Pacific Northwest who are doing things. They're trying things. And so they're collaborators. There's people doing stuff all over the country that really want to love their neighbors. And we get to learn from each other. So fun gathering, too. We have a lot of fun. Okay, so we got to end our time. Joey has a packet of information.
Some packets.
Yeah. I want to say a couple things, too.
Okay.
I bet. Dad can never resist.
How's your dad?
He's good. He stayed home from work today.
Can you help
pass
the list? Yeah, absolutely.
Pass it out to everyone. You take one. I think we have plenty of copies here. Here, just take that.
And these are, for the most part, this is just like, these are take-home
stuff. This is homework. This is homework, right?
Fun.
I just want to go through it real... Okay. Do you want to talk first until everyone's...
We need to wrap up. Yeah. So you may be wondering, what are the spiritual results of these two in the lives of many people? And let me tell you, there are many. There's a couple of dozen people in Colorado Springs that God used these two to bring to Jesus. That's a lot of folks. And it was through this process, this method. My son led three of his roommates in college to the Lord. One got two masters at the same time, simultaneously. One is a, who's the guy, what was the guy, Fred?
Spread the nose.
Photographic memory.
Ever. Photographic memory. Never studied.
Never go to class.
Every test. Never went. Led him to the Lord. Another guy named Eric, who they saw in the Sterling area next to the Quad Cities in Illinois. These guys are just wonderful people. And so the spiritual fruit through this relationship building, they're not, because that's God's work. God's work to save. Ours is to be faithful and to sow and to water. Yeah. So there's been a lot of great fruit. The guy who got two masters was living in Chicago, and he wasn't doing well spiritually. And his name's Moby. They call him Moby. I wish he could come this weekend. He decided to move to Colorado Springs to be near these guys so he would do better. And he's doing,
yeah,
awesome. Doing well. That community down there is still thriving, that they so were good. The hub of, and then they moved away. And so there's been a lot of great spiritual fruit. It takes time, though, right?
Yeah.
Fruit
yeah.
Takes time. It's helpful to not have had kids yet. All of us didn't have kids yet. So we all have lots of time together. So time was helpful. Time was on our side.
Yeah. So yes, you guys can close. And,
So just
cool. Question.
Hi. Do you have anything besides the cute packet? I mean, like, do you have a book to recommend? Websites to you know, let's dive into this as opposed to... This is it, guys. Get out the door.
Yeah, we can. Why don't we talk after? Because I'm not sure what our time frame is here.
Yeah.
But we
and
can
also anything like that, I can continue to throw resources at my dad to pass on. Lots of books that we've read. There's just more and more. There's a lot of energy around the country in this area. So if you guys are asking the question, you're here tonight, it's happening all over. And it's really exciting. God is, he's not thwarted by what's going on in our culture at all. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But when you become more willing, I think God just brings those opportunities back your way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's got to do a work in our own hearts. I mean, we're all in this process together. So let's give each other grace, but let's also spur one another on, right, to love and good deeds. Okay, so let me just explain this really quick. These are different things that have been helpful for people around the country, and they've been put together by people around the country. So you've got the first two pages are kind of assessing your own neighborhood, kind of questions, assessing you and your neighborhood. Hey, how many neighbors do you know by name? You know, how many neighbors have been in your home? How many homes of your neighbors have you been in? You know, things like that. And hopefully, if the answer is none, then you've got work to do. And this helps you do the work. This is your house. Do you know the people that live in the 8 houses, 9 houses, whatever surrounding you? This is a map of sorts, right? Okay. Our friend Kirk Lochner lives in Seattle. He put praying through your neighborhood, prayer walking your neighborhood, 30 days of prayer. Different things you can pray for 30 days. So that's something maybe you feel like, I want to commit to, I want to do something. You know, get some exercise, 30 days.
Lent is starting on Wednesday.
Do it for Lent. Yeah.
Hey. Goal-oriented people, come on.
Lent's 40 days, so maybe...
You can walk 10 extra days.
Uh-huh. we've already come up with some ideas. This is 100 other ideas that of people that have done different things in their neighborhood. We've been compiling a list. 100 initiatives in your neighborhood. 100 ways to engage your neighborhood. And then this second-to-last page is 30 ways to bless your workplace. You look at them. They might spark an idea for you. And then the last page is just a little bit of reflection that you can do on our time tonight. Do it on your own. But there's a quote there from Henry Nouwen that I really like. And just some questions for you. Is there one thing, one idea that you can walk away from right now that God's saying, try that? Yeah, that very well could be His Holy Spirit just prompting something. So.